Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And by Antioch University New England, offering doctoral degrees in clinical psychology, environmental studies, and marriage and family therapy, as well as master's degrees and certificates. antioch.edu/nhradio.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Will 2018 be a year of economic boom, bust, or bumping along here in the Granite State? That's what we're asking this hour on The Exchange in our first economic news roundup of the new year. We'll hear our guests' predictions for those factors that affect our economy, from workforce to wages to housing. And don't forget politics. The legislature has dozens of bills before it on business and economic issues. Then there's the new tax law, with impacts on the Granite State much debated. Let's hear from you, too. What's your own economic forecast for this year? Or your hopes and your worries from that economic standpoint? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. We welcome your emails, exchange@nhpr.org. Or respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. One more time, that email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our economists are Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, an economic research firm based in New Hampshire. And Brian, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Russ Tebow, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm in Laconia. And Russ, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also with us, Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. And Jeff, thank you for your time.
Great to be here, Laura.
Well, all of you, let's get your own economic predictions, forecasts for the new year, and then we'll dig into the detail for the rest of the hour. So, Russ, you first, your brief overall tweetable economic okay. forecast for the new year.
Well, we really are in a situation where we have a Goldilocks economy, not too hot, not too cold, and that's true nationally and here in New Hampshire as well. We're going in with good, strong momentum going forward, 3% growth here in New Hampshire, 3% growth nationally. Growth has slowed a little bit in New Hampshire in terms of job growth, but primarily because we just don't have the people to fill potential positions. The consensus nationally is this Goldilocks economy is going to continue. The risks are probably more on the upside. In other words, the forecast generally is about 2.5% growth, 2% inflation, a couple of interest rate bumps. That's sort of the big picture. What has happened that changed a lot of things is the tax cut that, of course, happened just a week or two ago, and that introduces a lot of uncertainty. So I think that if you kind of go out this consensus, there's a big range of possible outcomes, which means that many, many forecasts are going to be screwed up. They're going to be wrong because there's so many different potential scenarios out there that have legitimacy. But so I think we have a lot of uncertainty. But fundamentally, the consensus is Goldilocks will continue to not too hot, not too cold.
Well, I know Brian wants to talk about what economists got wrong in 2017. But first, Brian, what about 2018? What's your forecast?
Well, my summary is the theme is brother or sister, can you spare some time? And that's really a function of the labor constraints that we face. I characterize the New Hampshire economy in 2018 as a slower growth but not fundamentally weaker economy.
Slower but not weaker.
Yeah. The vibrancy of our industries is strong, and particularly in the southern part of New Hampshire, not so much in the northern part. So we've got some vibrant industries. What we don't have is a vibrant labor force, a lot of headwinds in the labor force. So we're labor constrained, and that's why we're going to see slower growth. I'm forecasting that we'll struggle to reach a 1% growth in employment. I've been tracking aggregate hours worked, which is a proxy for GDP growth when you factor in productivity. It looks to me like we're going to be at about 1.5 to maybe I don't think we'll get to 2% GDP growth in New Hampshire, and I compare that to the U.S., which is a little bit less labor-constrained, probably about 2.8% GDP growth. So, you know, we haven't really figured out how to deal with the labor constraints yet. We're struggling to adapt our policies in New Hampshire to move from a policy that fundamentally looks to attract business to one that fundamentally looks to attract individuals and to train them for the jobs that are available. And we haven't gotten there yet.
That's interesting because for years, and we'll talk about the intersection of politics and the economy a little bit later, Brian, but for years and years, politicians have all said, I'm going to bring businesses, right. employers yeah. to New Hampshire. Now they need to say, we've got the employers, we need the workers.
And if you look at the places in New Hampshire that are most successful, they're the places that continue and have continued to attract individuals, even during difficult economic yeah. times.
Okay, so Jeff, Goldilocks economy, brother, can you spare some time? What's your forecast?
Well, actually, you know, we do an economic preview every year in the paper. It just came out in the January 5th issue and talked to a lot of business people. And I think I agree exactly what Brian and Russ are saying. It's really the big constraint still is the workforce, is the lack of a workforce, of a robust workforce. And to what Brian said, I think it's really interesting to note that we'll talk about this later about the various legislation that's going on that affect businesses in New Hampshire. But there really is nothing aimed at attracting people to come to New Hampshire. The policymakers in New Hampshire have not yet grasped that idea. I mean, what we need is people. We need to figure out ways to affordable housing.
People talk about it a lot, but you're saying
there's no public policy measures, you know. Because, you know, first of all, one of the big things is the affordability of a college education, which is not on the agenda in Concord, usually never is. There's another thing about affordable housing. Things of that nature, things that would attract people who could come here and afford to live. And that's an issue that has not yet come on the radar in the State House.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Or send us an email with your own economic forecast for the new year. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is great. It's NHPR Exchange. Again, that email is exchange@nhpr.org. What is your economic prediction for 2018? What economic hopes and worries do you have about the new year? Join us as we take a look at this on our New Hampshire Economic Roundup. And Brian, I want to go to you first on this. So what did you get wrong in 2017 as we sort of make these predictions, but as Russ said, recognize that they might not be 100%?
That's
right.
Always a difficult question to find something I was wrong about in the prior
year. Try hard.
Well, first, I was wrong in thinking I was the only, like, really smart, very stable genius in this country. I somehow was under the impression that I was the only one. First, I was a little bit too optimistic in terms of job growth in New Hampshire. I had forecasts. I went back and looked at some of the forecasts I had done to different organizations, and I was expecting about 1.8% job growth. I think we're going to come in most recently through November at about 1.2, between 1.2 and 1.3. So I was a little bit too optimistic. I was thinking that we would draw more people into the labor force, that it would be a little bit more elastic, and that really hasn't happened. I mean, we still have some slack, but we haven't been able to draw people in. The other thing that on a national level, that I was really wrong about is that we had this tremendous level of confidence in business, in consumers, and yet we had a solid but not spectacular national economy. We will wind up growing about 2.3 to maybe 2.5% in 2017. A good but not spectacular economy, yet confidence in business and consumers was off the wall. And I sort of expected that at some point, with all the uncertainties in the national economy, a lot of policies, trade, immigration, what was happening with health care, a lot of European concerns, and a whole lot of crazy going on in Washington, that confidence would erode. But it hasn't, despite all the crazy and despite the fact that it's a good but not spectacular economy. So I was really wrong about that.
On the state level, you thought that that job growth would be bigger because you thought we'd be able to draw more people
right.
in. And on the national level, you thought things might be a little more shaky, and they
also. I thought that confidence would be shaken at some point by some of the events. You know, the stock market has completely discounted all of the potential negatives out there. And I think consumers have, and largely businesses. Businesses were facing a lot of uncertainty going into 2017. Immigration policies, which could have had a pretty significant effect on a lot of businesses, including in New Hampshire. The potential for trade wars was very real at the beginning of 2017, and that would have a big effect in New Hampshire, NAFTA in particular with New Hampshire. So there was a lot of uncertainties. Everybody just seemed to dismiss the possibility that any of those things could go wrong. And I'm still a little bit worried that some of those things could go wrong and that confidence at some point will have to...
So that your predictions might turn out to be right, but just a little bit later than what you thought. Where'd you get it wrong, Russ?
I thought that the bump in the stock market from November to December would kind of tail off as the year went on. And it was a sort of an emotional reaction to the election. In fact, the market's just been strong. It's up 25%.
Really?
It seems to be incredible to think, as we sit here today, that the value of corporate America is reflected in the stock market, that a fourth of the current value has accrued during just the last, year. So I felt that the market would not perform this way. And the economic significance of that is that there's an income effect and a wealth effect. The wealth effect has encouraged people to borrow a lot of money, spend a lot of money, and keep the economy going. So there's a correlation between the strong stock market performance and a U.S. economy that grew at 3.1% during the last quarter. So I thought that the market would not be able to sustain the kind of growth that it has. And the second thing is that there's a disconnect then between the stock market and wages. And I felt that wages, with our unemployment rate nationally at a 17-year low, New Hampshire the lowest in the country, that both nationally and here in New Hampshire we'd see some really significant wage growth. There was an article, I forget, maybe the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal that I read, that said wage growth is really picking up. It's already up to 2.8%. Meanwhile, the stock market has inflated 10 times that rate. So I felt that wages would kick in, more wage growth would kick in. We're seeing some in the Nashua region. We're seeing some in Manchester. But both nationally and statewide, that's been the disappointing thing. And I felt that wages would rise to pull more people into the labor force, and that didn't happen.
Well, I can see why you would think that, because Jeff and Brian both talked about, New Hampshire especially, our extreme workforce needs. And so you'd think, okay, we need more workers, so, the price of workers, labor, in other words, wages, should go up.
Right, exactly. And productivity growth hasn't been that strong either. So I think that what's happened is employers are having a hard time filling slots, so they're just not bothering anymore almost, It's just so difficult to hire new people at this point, whether it's skilled or unskilled, that it's kind of slowing the economy, as Brian pointed out, here in New Hampshire. Growth has been slowing down during the course of the year.
Well, and Jeff, as you said, New Hampshire Business Review, at the beginning of every year, does a sort of economic forecast. So how was your 2017 edition off target?
I think it was off target only because I was looking at it, and I realized that pretty much what we said in 2017, we say the same thing for 2018. And it was the effects of workforce needs it seemed as if some business owners were concerned, more than a little concerned, about what 2017 would offer for them in terms of growth of their own businesses and stuff. But as we've seen, it's pretty much New Hampshire has had a very, I wouldn't say a robust economy, but it's been strong. And that's not what people in January 2017 necessarily thought it would be doing as well as it is doing now. And as we go into 2018, expecting more of the same. I did want to say something about this workforce, employers trying to find a workforce. In our economic preview, we talked to a company named Single Digits there in Bedford. And they've been a very successful company. They put Wi-Fi in like large buildings, commercial buildings, apartment buildings. And in their quest for employees, what they're doing is buying other companies. And that's how they get employees.
So you get 20 employees right off the bat there.
Yeah, which is how, that's where they I guess that's thinking creatively. It's a little, you know, it's probably a little expensive, but that's how badly they need employees and how hard it is to find employees in New Hampshire that they have to be doing this mergers and acquisitions and that kind of stuff.
I want you to explain something to me, Russ, that you mentioned a moment ago. You said the stock market had gone up 25% over the past year with an economy that's grown about 3%. So line that up for us. I don't really get it. I mean, is that stock market increase, which is amazing, is that sort of based on hard, real stuff, or is it cotton candy?
I think it's a lot of it is confidence. The stock market is basically a way of saying today what you think the future will be, because when you buy a stock today, what you're buying is the future earnings, in effect. So I think a lot of it is really psychological. There's if you look at the relationship between stock prices and earnings, okay, the long-term average is that the stock market, if you can generalize it that much, sells for 17 times earnings. Right now it's at 24, okay? So the answer to your question is you cannot justify it based on fundamentals. You have to justify it based on a very optimistic view of the future. Now, before the tax cut, I would have said there's a lot of jeopardy here. With this tax cut that drops the corporate rate from 35 to 21%, that really is a windfall for corporate America. So it may well be that where we are now that looks overpriced will prove to be reasonable.
Brian, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
No, I think Russ is absolutely right. I think the market has priced in that tax cut. Priced in probably three quarters of that tax cut already. It did. It was probably much more optimistic about the possibilities of realizing that corporate tax cut than a lot of politicians and a lot of individuals. But you know, it's going to add what, $10 to $15 earnings per share on the Standard & Poor's, somewhere along that line. So it's the potential 12% to the stock market itself, and we've priced in already about 8 or 9% of that. So it's got a little bit more to go. So I'm saying, you know, that's not my bailiwick either, but another 4 to 5% probably in 2018.
But Russ, isn't another phrase for confidence, irrational exuberance?
Well, yes. But remember that when Alan Greenspan said that in December of 2005, he was also just engaged to Andrea Mitchell. So that may have influenced his thinking that same month. Two things. And actually, that was, I think, 95 or 96. And the market did prove him right, but it took 4 years. So if you wait long enough, I suppose any prediction will come true.
Yeah, but
however, I think there is a parallel now. And the liability going forward is that the fundamentals don't support the kind of stock market that we have, and therefore you have to start questioning whether consumers are smart, really going out and borrowing a ton of money.
So at some point you need fundamentals to back up those high Dow Jones Industrial Average numbers.
The thing is asset bubble. That's what we're talking about here. Is the stock market a bubble right now that's going to correct? And, you know, there's a lot more talk both in the professional journals and newspapers than there had been as to possibly a decline in the market.
But, and also another factor in this in the growth of the stock market over all these many years is that we've had such low interest rates. And this is basically the stock market is the place where you're going to go to get some kind of decent return.
Sure, you hope
on your investment.
So low.
Yeah, you know I get in the mail, you know, the bank bragging about a 5-year CD that's 2%.
Which is barely keeping pace with inflation.
Yeah, exactly.
So why not go to the stock market?
Yeah, so that's been driving that as well. So maybe as interest rates go up this year, which they will, you know, what will happen then?
Well, another type of prediction I'd love to get from you, Brian, not so much, you know, what you got wrong in 2017, what you expect to happen in 2018, but what would be great if it did happen this year? What would be a really nice New Year's gift for the New Hampshire economy?
I've got a few. One we've kind of already talked about. If the focus of New Hampshire policy were more on attracting individuals as opposed to attracting businesses. By the way, I give that a low probability. The interests right now are up. Look, there's business groups that lobby for policies to attract business. There's no organized lobbying or organization for promoting and looking to attract individuals. It will have to, New Hampshire's not monolithic. It will happen at the local level. That's where it's happening. That's where the exciting things are. But I've got a couple more predictions after this break.
Okay, after the break, we will go to them. Also, I'll get, you know, what would be a nice New Year's gift from you guys as well, Russ and Jeff. And then we should talk about some of the policies that are being discussed at the State House, what impact they might or might not have. And we'll talk a lot more about the new tax law, its possible impact on New Hampshire. There's been a lot of debate about that, as you guys know. And we'll take your economic predictions for the new year. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR's Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup with predictions for the Granite State for the new year. In a few minutes, we'll turn to politics and economics, including the new tax laws, Granite State economic impact, and all those bills before the New Hampshire legislature that would affect businesses and their workers. Join us with your comments and questions. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter, NHPR Exchange. The phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Again, that email address, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Brian Gottlob, definitely want to let you finish there. I asked you just before the break, what would be a great New Year's gift to the New Hampshire economy in 2018? And one thing you said was that we start attracting those workers that our employers so desperately need.
Another one is, and I have a high degree that this will actually get this gift, is that Amazon does not pick New Hampshire for its location.
So it's a negative gift that you hope we get.
Exactly. I would much rather have 10,000 new businesses with 5 employees each or 5,000 new employers with 10 employees each than an Amazon location here, which would be a nightmare for almost all existing businesses, as well as housing market and housing affordability, and a whole lot of other problems.
So no to Amazon
no
HQ2,
to Amazon
and you think you will get that,
I think
that
I'll
wish
get that
for New Hampshire. Okay.
The other gift, and I think we're getting it in a way that we didn't expect, is I think the tax law is going to have some pretty negative impacts on a lot of northeastern states. Negative impacts in terms of the cost. Northeastern states tend to have a lot of relatively high wealth individuals with high mortgages and high level of itemizers. Those people are going to be hurt by this. A lot of those people are going to be hurt by this tax policy. There are also people who we tend to attract from in New Hampshire. So I'm thinking that, and it probably won't be 2018, but 2019, we'll start seeing some demographic shifts and maybe a pickup in migration, which is already starting to pick up. But I think that tax law will exacerbate that. So I think that will be a gift because we'll tend to attract more well-educated, higher-income, skilled individuals as a result of this.
What would be great, Jeff, in the New Hampshire economy in 2018?
Well, actually, I'd say
you don't have to pick three. You can just pick one.
No, I know. Well, actually, I was going to say the thing about Amazon, but that which we don't need. But I think one thing would be great is if we had a really strong understanding in people, you know, public officials, that New Hampshire has a really great potential in really expanding its biotech sector because of the Nadine Kamen's project in Manchester. It's, you know, that's not a local project. That's not just something for Manchester. That could have a huge impact on the entire state. And I think it would be really great if we had, if somehow we were able to grasp how important that could be for this state.
Just remind listeners what that is. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it's a big deal, and people might not remember what you're talking about,
Jeff. Dean Kamen, the inventor, famous inventor of Segway, but also a brilliant inventor of many other things and creator of FIRST, the robotics competition, and many other things. He has been able to get funding through the Defense Department to open up a Advanced Regenerative Medicine Institute, which basically would be a manufacturing organs,
tissues, body and
parts,
organs,
tissues for you know, for replacement in you know, for, that's why the Defense Department's interested, because of all the injuries they have to their soldiers.
Sure, from IEDs
and so forth. And this would also have obviously a benefit throughout the world, not just for people in the military. And there's interest from major corporations all over that are going to be, that are interested or have already set up some kind of shop, put some kind of they planted their flag in this also in Manchester. And this potentially, it's going to be an industry. It doesn't even exist anymore. It doesn't even exist now, and it will exist in New Hampshire if everybody, you know, plays their cards right. It could potentially be just massive, much better than Amazon opening up its headquarters in Londonderry, wherever they wanted to do it. This would just attract so many people with skills. This is not a low skill, low wage industry by any means.
Yeah, the types of education and the types of jobs that would be available.
And it would require really beefing up our universities, our colleges, and making sure that we have the kind of programs that would be required to be able to train people, to educate people who could take these jobs.
So when you say, your wish for the New Hampshire economy for 2018 is that policymakers would recognize how huge this is. In what way, Jeff? I mean, are you just beyond Manchester? You're just not hearing people talking about it? Or what sort of recognition do you think it deserves?
Well, my primary one is that they really understand that they need to put investments in the colleges, the universities, the state colleges, specifically University of New Hampshire at Manchester, which is right there in the mill yard.
And they are going to be working together.
And UNH also at Durham is in the process of trying to get the money to open up a whole new biological sciences building, which is really pretty much not exactly up to date right now. And this is something that was punted basically by the legislature last year, and it should be a sign. I think the legislature, the governor should really show very forcefully that they are fully behind this thing, and that would be something that would help, would be investing in the university system, especially in terms of the biological sciences.
So both you and Brian have touched on where I want to go next, which is policy and how it impacts the economy, and you've hinted as to some things that would help the economy. But Russ, I don't want to leave you out. Okay. So a 2018 New Year's gift for the New Hampshire economy, just one thing that would be fantastic.
5% wage growth, and then one other thing would be some stability in the healthcare industry. We've had just hospitals merging. There's issues about Medicaid funding. It's making it very difficult for consumers of healthcare and for providers both. So I'd like to see some stability come into that, possibly in Concord with Medicaid. And nationally, it seems like every day there's another part of the healthcare sector that's pulled apart, and we don't know how it's going to be put back together. And I think that if you look at our healthcare spending, of course, nationally, it's around $9,000 per capita, which is about twice what any other developed economy experiences in terms of costs. And with all of those costs, we're still not getting, I don't think, the kind of delivery system we would like. If you have a healthcare issue, you're probably complaining about one thing or another about it. So I'd like to see some stability
wish.
There.
Yeah.
And it's about a sixth of the U.S. economy, so it's a big deal.
Let's get our listeners too in on that question. We asked for your own economic predictions for 2018, but if you had an economic hope for the new year, we'd love to hear that too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org, or respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. So, Russ, since you talked about wages, got an email here from Kevin who says, vibrant sounds like a nice word, but wouldn't a truly vibrant economy attract younger workers? Kevin says, maybe having a minimum wage that is almost $3 an hour lower than all of our neighbors is a problem. And we do have on our website a chart of how minimum wages around New England are slated to go up. January 1st, they went up, so people can look at that. But basically, Massachusetts leads the pack at 11. Everybody else is around $10 and change.
Right, and we're at 7 and change.
7.25. Connected to the federal minimum wage.
I think that if you look at...
Does that make a difference in terms of what people really get paid?
You can talk on both sides of that. In terms of the actual percentage of New Hampshire workers that are working at minimum wage, it's pretty minimal. But I think that nonetheless, it says something about the state that it is not willing to have a competitive minimum wage. I think it just maybe it's a not saying we're not going to intervene to that degree. I think that's the argument for those that don't feel we should raise the minimum wage, that let's let the market forces play out. But if you're making $7.25 an hour, that's small solace for you. So even though it's a small part of the economy, I think that economically it is significant. I think in terms of the message that it sends, it's significant. And I personally feel that we should be competitive with our neighboring states and somewhere around $10 an hour.
Have you looked at this, Brian, how much people really do make the minimum wage, whether it sends the wrong message when everybody around us is $3 more?
As Russ said, it's really a small percentage. And in New Hampshire, it tends to be we have a lot of youth employment in the state, and that's really a blessing because we get a lot of people experience in the workforce, which, long term pays dividends in terms of their earnings throughout their life. But because we have a really vibrant lodging and restaurant industry and a vibrant comparatively retail industry, which tend to and recreational industries, which tend to employ a lot of very young people. So it tends to affect a lot of young people. And I know there are studies that show that a lot of, part-time workers and older people also make minimum wage. But the bottom line is there's very few people making it. It's a symbolic effort. And I've looked at trends in some of the lower wage industries. And I have to say, wages are growing faster in some of the lower wage industries than they are in the upper. And it's because the competition is greatest, for those. And those are industries that can't substitute technology in order to minimize their labor constraints. So they have to pay more, and they are paying more. So a lot of those lower wage industries are actually paying more, and wages are rising faster.
Well, Kevin, thank you for the email. And here's another email from Michael that I'll throw to you, Jeff, since you mentioned higher education. Michael says, is there any proof that affordable college tuition has a significant pull on a workforce? Michael also asks, do we have an under-enrollment problem in our colleges and universities? Michael, thank you for the questions. And Jeff?
Well, it's not that we have an under-enrollment problem. I think what really the problem is that we have an under-enrollment of New Hampshire residents going to our state universities and colleges because, many of them are going outside because they can get a better deal if they go to a school that is able to give them more financial aid and scholarships, which, UNH doesn't really have that kind of, it has financial aid, but not scholarships necessarily, except for a few of them. And, that we're losing our young people. They're going to go. And we've talked about this many times on this show everywhere that, once they leave, it's hard to get them back. And, that does have an effect on it. So if the state, I believe, my own personal opinion is the state should have a much more robust program of providing education, either free or very, very low cost to the best students in the state. Valedictorians, salutatorians, they do that in states all over the country. And I don't see why New Hampshire shouldn't be doing that as well.
Well, Michael, thank you for the email. And again, you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org with your economic observations, like Kevin and Michael did, or your predictions for the New Hampshire economy in the new year. Again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, too, 1-800-892-6477. Russ, this one's for you, since you talked a lot about the stock market. Doug emailed us. He says there's a questionable link between the stock market and the average household. He says the growing wealth divide in this country is devouring every piece of the middle class that is currently left, and the stock market is largely a sham for most Americans. Thanks, Doug, for the email.
I think he should be on the show. he should be here in the studio with us.
Is that middle-class Americans don't have any stock market investments? They invest in mutual funds and so forth.
Well,
and their pensions,
your 401k, your retirement account is heavily vested in the stock market and doing well because of that. So a lot of the pension funds that were underfunded that perhaps, I don't know, obviously, I don't know, Doug, but individuals that were counting on a 401k that was underfunded now, a lot of those retirement plans, because of this 25% bump in the market, one of the benefits of it is that, it's getting those pension funds to be solid again, solvent. But he's right about the disparities between what's happening in the stock market and what's happening on Main Street are tremendous. So
just because the average American doesn't own, stocks of General Motors whatever, It does affect.
Absolutely.
It does affect your average person.
It affects people's sense of well-being. And if you feel confident, as Brian said, consumer confidence is very high. Business confidence is very high. And I think we take a lot of our cues from, did the stock market go up? Did it drop 10%? Did it go up 2%
today? It's on the newscasts. There's always little pictures.
It's sort of a measure, you know, that's every day. A lot of the economic data we get is quarterly or monthly, but the market's there every day. There's that sort of yardstick. And I think we take a lot of our cues about the way things are going to be from the way the market's performing.
Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, you can always respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR. Exchange. And to the phones, gentlemen, and Galen is calling from Center Sandwich. Good morning, Galen. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a real pleasure. I love the work you do for the radio and people around the state who listen. I'm a 24-year-old, soon going to be 25, recent college graduate, and I'm actually in the middle of a job hunt right now. And I'm wondering what actually the ramifications of the new tax law are going to be in this year and in years beyond for students or former students like myself who are looking to enter the job market, and particularly in smaller states like New Hampshire. And I've just been wondering, particularly as well, since a lot of the focus so far has been on things like the carried interest loophole and how this affects the middle class but established wage earners. People say, like my parents, already have jobs, who might claim me as a dependent, say. But what about the dependents themselves who are looking to become independent?
Well, and we should definitely talk about that, Galen. But before I let you go, can I ask you a question? Since you are kind of the demographic that the state is hungering for, you know, young, college educated, what type of job are you looking for? And are you hoping to stay in New Hampshire?
Well, I'd love to stay in New Hampshire, actually, and I'm looking for almost anything I could get my hands on. I was a history major at Amherst College in Western Mass, but I wanted to return to the state because I would love to work for a place like NPR and HPR in particular, but I would any sort of nonprofit job where I can feel and I can give back to the state in a way that it gave to me, whether through nature or public services, or things like public radio, education, you name it.
All right. Well, Galen, good luck to you, and thank you for calling in. And we should talk more about the new tax law, because we've all sort of, you know, hinted at how it might affect this or that. But anybody want to jump in on Galen's concern, how this new law might affect people who aren't in the workforce yet, who are trying to become wage earners? I know there was a lot of chatter before the bill was signed into law about student loans and graduate students and so forth. I think for the most part, those provisions were taken out. But Brian, can you address Galen's question at all?
Probably not as thoroughly as he would like. I would say immediately one thing that jumps to mind, because he's not working at the moment, is the provisions that repeal the mandate for health insurance in the tax law, which will mean he will not have to have that expenditure. And if he doesn't have it, he won't face a penalty in his taxes. So that will be one thing. In terms of, it will have obviously some implications in terms of eliminating the personal exemption, but the standard deduction will be raised. So if he's not a wage earner, he may not have a liability anyway, so he probably doesn't have an impact. But for most wage earners, if you look, you know, the from the middle to the lower end of the income spectrum, you're talking about probably a reduction in or an increase in their after-tax income of somewhere between 1 and 2%. When you get to the upper income levels, it becomes much, much larger.
Well, and on our show on the tax law and its impact on New Hampshire, and we did sort of a very practical, non-political, nuts and bolts look at this. And one of the things that I learned, Russ, was that apart from just the new tax law, many, many, many grant staters of lower income, which sounds like Galen is, don't take the earned income tax credit. I think one of the guests said $30 million worth of, you know, $30 million worth of that is left on the table.
Get thee to a tax consultant.
Yeah.
Or go online.
Earned income tax credit,
right?
Helps low income
absolutely
people.
Yeah, I helped my son fill out his return, and they're eligible for it. It's a nice little benefit.
All right, Galen.
And there are organizations who can help people figure that out.
Right. Okay. Galen, good luck to you. Very good to hear from you. And we will take a lot more of your emails and calls after a short break. We'll also talk about some of those policies that the State House is debating that might affect the economy or might not affect especially our workforce issues, as Jeff Feingold has alluded to. And we'll also look at retail, how it fared over the holidays, and big, big shifts going on in retail here in the state and around the country. All that's coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our Economic News Roundup, the New Year's edition. We're getting our guests' predictions for the new year, and we'd love your thoughts, too. What's your economic forecast for 2018? What's your biggest hope for the economy in the new year? Let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Jeff Feingold, Brian Gottlob, Russ Thiebaud, just a little bit more on the new tax law and its possible economic impact here in New Hampshire. Again, I'm emphasizing possible because who knows? Russ, what about the housing sector? How might that react to some of the changes under this tax law?
It will affect the higher end of the market appreciably because there are limits on state and local tax deductions and there are limits on interest rate deductions that a lot of people have been comfortable accepting. It's been a subsidy for housing. The federal tax code has been a huge subsidy for the housing industry. Housing industry opposed this tax bill and probably appropriately. What it does is by raising the standard deduction, it moves a lot of people away from having to or being able to itemize. So it probably on balance, as Brian said, I think that it's going to blunt growth in housing prices to a degree. Not going to put the kibosh on housing, but it will slow things down.
Other possible impacts here in the Granite State that you guys see? Anybody? Russ?
What I wonder about is to me, if you kind of get back up to 30,000 feet and stop looking at, you know, line 26 of your tax return, the question is, what's corporate America going to do with this huge windfall we've granted them? Are they going to share the wealth in the form of higher wages? Are they going to hoard the wealth by buying back stock and retaining earnings? Or are they going to increase dividends and, in effect, pick the winners? So we just don't know how corporate America is going to deal with this. But we do know there's a lot of money on the table for them that wasn't there a month ago.
Well, to that end, as you all know, right after the tax bill was signed into law, a dozen or so, I lost track, companies said, hey, we're going to give our employees $1,000 bonuses, so this will have a ripple effect. I've got a little clip here from Southwest Airlines Chairman and CEO Gary Kelly in his New Year's message. In his words, we aren't wasting any time putting the tax savings to work.
And our first measure of business is to reward our Southwest employees with a $1,000 bonus. I am proud to share that we have earmarked $5 million to donate to charitable causes throughout 2018 with these tax savings. And this $5 million donation is in addition to our ongoing charitable support and partnerships with nonprofits across the country. And we'll work with our partners to put this money to work in the communities where our employees work and live.
Again, that's Southwest Airlines Chairman and CEO Gary Kelly. So that's the unknown, how lots of companies will act. Will they act like Southwest? Will they give it to shareholders? Will they stash it under a mattress? We don't know, Brian.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a number of companies have announced different kinds of provisions for how they're going to use that. And I kind of characterize that a lot of those companies are companies that, you know, have some issue with their conscience. They're companies that have issues, AT&T because of its merger and the potential blockage of its merger, Bank of America. You know, you've got some financial institutions that, you know, the public has some issues with, airlines, which often the public has some issues with. So there's a fair amount of conscience money. But the real issue is, what does it mean in terms of the long term on the supply side investment for business? Is it going to increase investment? I think in the short term, probably not that much. The evidence for these tax cuts, if you look historically, doesn't have a big boost immediately in terms of investment. There's plenty of companies right now that have hordes of cash. It's about 22% of private sector GDP right now. They have that amount of cash. So they could be investing. It's not going to be necessarily in the short term a big boost.
I'm a little pessimistic about it, about that as well, too. And actually, when you think about it, you know, Apple's effective tax rate is about 2.5%. So 21%
effective tax rate.
Yeah, so 21%. You know, they're still having their money in Ireland, and they didn't show any desire to open up any kind of plants in the United States. You know, the way that, you know, you'd think they would with all that money that they have.
Well, again, there's been lots of coverage of this. We did a whole program on it a couple weeks ago. Who knows?
I do want to say that I think lowering tax rates was a good thing to do. Corporate tax rates in particular were good. I think they could have done more in terms of getting some of the subsidies out and lowering it. I think they could have done those things, but they didn't.
Let's turn to New Hampshire politics and some of the impacts that some of the activity in the legislature might have on the issues that you guys have raised from housing to workforce to investment and so forth. And Jeff, you touched on a couple of the items that you guys are tracking in the State House. But here's one that we haven't talked about yet, an email from Sharon in Bedford, who says, I have heard that there is in the legislature a recommendation to provide tax benefits to companies who will work to help people who are in substance abuse recovery get back into the workforce. Does your panel know anything about this effort? This would not only provide workers for the New Hampshire economy, but it would provide a valuable tool for people to maintain sobriety. Sharon, I heard about that, too. So, Jeff, I'd love to ask if you know anything about this, because that seems like an untapped resource.
Yes, actually, there's a bill that specifically would give a tax break to, I guess they would call them, recovery-friendly workplaces. If you have a recovery-friendly workplace, which I'm not sure what the definition would be of that, you would get a tax break. I think that would mean if you hire people who are in recovery, just like if you hire people with disability or certain other things, you get a benefit that way, a credit. This would be the same kind of thing. I believe it's sponsored by Senator Bradley, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But there is a specific bill for that, and it's another example of the reaction, you know, the response to the opioid, the ongoing addiction crisis that we have in this state.
And at New Hampshire Business Review, you guys did a whole article running down, you know, extensively the bills related to workforce, economy, taxation, and so forth. So I'll refer people to that. We put it on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. You're welcome. A little cross promotion there. But is there something else, Jeff, from that list that jumps out at you in terms of, you know, a big potential impact on the economy here in New Hampshire?
Well, the big kahuna is, without a doubt, the Medicaid expansion. That's going to be the debate. It's going to suck most of the oxygen out of the room eventually, you know, this session. Because right now, New Hampshire... The Medicaid expansion funded by the federal government expires very shortly. Now New Hampshire has to determine whether it wants to kick in 10% of the cost. And that's going to be a big debate in the legislature. There are attempts to address this. One would be, I believe, Representative Kirk would basically get rid of a Medicaid expansion, just say people who are 100% of poverty would get it. Now it's 138%, which is a big difference.
And it changes the category of people eligible.
Absolutely.
Before it was poor and.
Yes.
As in poor with young children, poor with disabilities. This is just anyone who's under 138% of poverty, so a lot more people.
Exactly. And there is a bill, though, that's basically looking to figure out a way to keep the Medicaid expansion, but trying to rein in the costs, because that was something they found out about it. And that would be, I think, basically it would – right now the people on the expanded Medicaid – go on the Affordable Care Act exchanges to purchase their insurance, but I think what they would do is bring all those people in and they'd all get the same kind of
traditional
Medicaid, and that's an attempt to do it. There also, I think, would be workforce restrictions, which they would need permission from the federal government, and I would think under this administration that's probably pretty easy. It's going to happen. The main thing about the Medicaid expansion, why it has such a big effect on the economy, is that the many business organizations led by the Business and Industry Association in New Hampshire have felt and have actually seen that by eliminating this unfunded care that was given, that hospitals were giving to people who couldn't afford health insurance, didn't have health insurance, that was raising their costs and thus raising insurance premiums for employers.
So business groups supported Medicaid expansion here in the state.
And they still do, as far as I know. The other thing is that hospitals were left holding the bag on these costs, and that you know, hospitals in almost every community where they are, just about the biggest employer in that community. That's a big deal for a lot of wherever there's a hospital. That's a big deal in that community, and they are just and they have, you know, basically almost stabilized pretty well under Medicaid expansion when it comes to that. There are other issues affecting healthcare, but you know, that's another discussion for another day.
So that's a huge economic issue.
But it's a huge economic, yeah, absolutely. And this is going to be the big kahuna for this session.
Other policies, Brian, that the legislature might be examining that you think could have an impact on workers, on employers?
Well, I think that, you know, there's some initiatives in terms of family leave that have the potential.
Being voted on today, actually.
Yeah,
we're doing a program on that on Thursday.
Well, I won't cover too much of that, but I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, when we talk about attracting individuals, those are the kinds of policies that you have to begin seeing discussed at a more thorough level than have been in the past. So I think they'll get more stronger hearings. I think they'll become more prominent in the policymaking. I would go even further. You know, one of the big problems we have in the state demographically is the fact that we have such low birth rates. And one of the factors that influences that is the opportunity cost for women to have children is tremendous. We have well-educated women who earn a lot. When they take time off to have children, there's a huge cost to that. And if we can minimize that, then I think we can help address some of the demographic trends.
Well, toward that end, you mentioned demographics. Here's an email from Michael in Campton who says, what do your guests predict for New Hampshire's colleges and universities this year and beyond? Plymouth and Keene State both recently had reorganizations forced by financial urgency. Michael says regional demographics are hindering all colleges in the state. What will higher ed look like in the future? Michael, we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago, actually, as a result of those changes in Keene. But go ahead, Russ. I'd love your thoughts on Michael's email. And thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I think that it comes down to basically that we just haven't been willing to step up to the plate and adequately fund public education in New Hampshire. And as Jeff pointed out, it's resulting in an out-migration of the very people we'd like to keep here. So maybe
people like Galen who called in.
Yeah, like Galen, exactly. And so I think that that is something that we would be beneficial to the state and its economy if we did take a little more optimistic view of the impact of education funding at post-secondary education funding in New Hampshire. We've been very, very tight with our funding.
Brian, jump in.
Yeah, I think that one of the things we're going to see is we're going to see a shrinking of four-year institutions and more of a focus on certificates and community college, which would be a good thing, I think. One of the problems is that, you know, we work so hard to get people into four-year institutions, and not everyone should be going to a four-year institution. So I think we're for a lot of people, they're incurring a lot of costs, and they are not getting the benefit. I think we're going to see kind of a restructuring of our post-secondary education to reflect more of the needs of the job market, but also more of the needs of individuals to be put into the right track. I hate to use the word track, but given the right options, more options, instead of just saying you have to have a four-year college degree in order to be successful, that is not true, and it's becoming less true all the time.
Yeah, another aspect to the difficulties that the four-year colleges in particular are feeling is that, you know, there's been a reduction in the number of students from overseas coming to the United States because of the various administration policies on immigration, and that affects colleges in a lot of ways because I know there's several New Hampshire four-year colleges that are actively try to attract overseas students because, as we say in Brooklyn, they pay full-blown retail. You know, they're paying customers.
Right. I heard from a college president, a small college president, that was a concern, that she had students who would go. They were afraid they'd go home for the holidays and not be able to come back. Right. So why bother to enroll?
Yeah, these are the questions they ask.
Go to Canada.
That's what they ask the recruiters overseas. You know, if I come to the United States, will I be and I go home? Am I going to be able to come back? If I come, you know, there's so much uncertainty that it's limiting the number of students from overseas coming to the United States, and that has been a very strong source of revenue for many 4-year colleges.
Other specific policies, Russ, that you're looking at in the New Hampshire legislature in terms of their economic impact. I mean, there's so many, and I would refer people to NHBR's article.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great article. I think it's been pretty much covered here, I think, by Brian and Jeff. I don't have a lot to add to it. I think that the Medicaid thing looms large in my mind.
Right. And you talked about the importance of healthcare stability and for economic success.
The whole healthcare funding thing now is cost sharing. It's not about cost control. It's about cost sharing. Who's going to pick up the bill? Is it going to be Medicaid? Is it going to be Lakes Region General Hospital, which already, you know, 50% of its billings are uncollectable? So you're looking at small hospitals having only 3 or 4 days of cash on hand.
Okay, so those, and again, as Jeff said, those hospitals are economic drivers in their communities.
Going to Lakes Region General is anecdotal, but there's like 1,200 employees in a regional economy that's pretty small.
Well, final comment from Eric in Conway, who says lowering tax rates for corporations would be fine only if it's a deduction for raising wages and hiring full-time workers. So there's a comment from Eric. Thank you, Eric. And just to close out with you guys, wow, there's so much more that we could have talked about. But to you, Jeff, what projects are you going to be working on in the new year that we can look forward to? I know you guys like to sort of dig into some of these big issues.
Yeah, I mentioned it before. So we'll be focusing a lot on this biotech growth in New Hampshire, you know, the attempt to grow this industry even stronger. There's some outposts where there is strong biotech, like especially the Upper Valley. But this is an attempt to see if this industry is going to really be really take hold in New Hampshire and could be a big difference, a difference maker for the state.
How about you, Russ? We can be looking at
working on Interstate 93 and the Everett Turnpike expansions between Bow and Concord through Concord, and between Merrimack and Manchester, where it narrows down to two lanes, maybe expanding to three or four lanes. So we're looking at the economics of that. The other thing I'd say is I did go online and I have a beautiful quote from the Fed's December policy report. If I may, it says,
please.
It's very short. It's one sentence, and it's very interesting. It says, our discussions of the economy may sometimes ring in the ears of the public with more certainty than is appropriate. So you got to take everything we say with a bit of a grain of salt, even the Fed.
Kind of what Brian said, it's important for prognosticators to be humble.
Yes, exactly.
As hard as that may be for some of us.
How about you, Brian? What are you working on?
I'm looking at some energy issues, in particular renewable energy and how that plays into some of the cost issues here in New Hampshire, and some occupational issues in terms of the impediments to movement of people who have particular occupational licenses, how that limits our ability to grow our labor force because of the differences among states. So I think that's one of the keys to helping increase the size of our labor force here in New Hampshire.
That's very interesting. And I just anecdotally have had more than one person come up to me and say, you should look at this because I would love to practice XYZ in New Hampshire, you know, substance abuse counseling, whatever it may be, but I can't because my credentials are in Massachusetts or Maine.
Absolutely.
And so that's
it's a big issue. It's under the radar, but it has a pretty significant impact on the labor force and the ability of people to move where there are opportunities.
All right. Well, gentlemen, lots more to talk about when we meet again. And we also didn't even talk about retail, some huge shifts there. So we'll cover that next time. Jeff Feingold, really good to see you. Thank you very much.
It's great being here, Laura.
Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Brian Gottlob, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, an economic research firm based in Dover. And Russ Thiebaud, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Russ Thiebaud, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm in Laconia. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.